Welcome to Real Estate Hackers, where you'll hear how real estate investors grew something from nothing.
Property management is going to become more techy. Our entire business today is based off of a hack. What if you could put $1,000 into an apartment building project on your phone?
With YouTube, with podcasts, you can catch up very quickly to a seasoned investor.
Now here's your real estate hacker host, Chad Gallagher.
Today's episode is part of our Landlord Chronicle series, where we hear from amazing landlords about their most interesting landlording story, along with a lesson to help you invest better.
So TJ, give for everyone listening, give the background of kind of who you are. Maybe start there, like who you are, what you've done in real estate, and then kind of like give us the what happened here.
Yeah. So TJ Williams, been real estate since 2010. Been in the financial services industry since 2001. So my main job overall is financial planning or in financial distribution for the last 21, 22 years now. I've done that all over the East Coast. Got into real estate after being laid off. Our entire division was laid off in 2000, and I think it was 2009. And purchased our first property. I was looking for something for additional income. And I had sold a business earlier, so we had some cash and also been pretty good savers, like a lot of people just, you know, squirreling away some money, and decided to have an idea of not just one property, but let's buy a duplex or a triplex or a quadplex. So the initial thought was we'll run something with multiple streams of income. So if there was no tenant in one building, we could still float the note if we needed to off of one or two others. So that started us looking. And at the time I was living just outside of Philadelphia and New Jersey area, Southern New Jersey. And by looking for triplexes, we moved into the idea of looking at a fourplex, a quadplex. And at that point I realized, all right, once I go into to four units in one building, it actually can become a commercial property. And then through those searches, we ran across a couple of these really small, unique self-storage facilities. And in and around the Philadelphia area, Eastern Pennsylvania, where we were, there are a lot of these, you know, row homes that were built back in the 50s or early 50s, right after World War II. And behind them, there was a string of garages, if you will, that went with the row homes. And so they're all over South Jersey, they're all over Philadelphia. And so we started finding these, and I saw a couple of them that were for sale. And I looked at it and kind of ran the math on it real quick. And I thought, well, there's really no, nothing to really think about it. There's no electric, there's no water. If something goes wrong, okay, I can read up on, tenant laws versus, you know, what would be, you know, if there was somebody actually living there. So it just became this idea of what else can I learn to figure out? So we ended up looking at about four or five of them before we actually really got deep. And then we ended up putting an offer in on three of them. We finally bought our first, and it was 19 individual garage units. Wow. And with those 19 individual garage units, I went as basic as went onto Craigslist to see what people were renting per square foot. And then was actually attached to a parking lot. It wasn't rented as a parking lot, but it was a lot. And I thought, well, we're in Collingswood. There has to be a way that we could probably do something where we could make this a rentable lot and rentable space. And we actually ended up doing that. So we ended up purchasing this. At the time, I thought this is either the best decision I'm ever going to make or it's going to be the worst. And I thought, if nothing else, at 29 years old, this is probably going to be 31 years old. This is going to be a learning experience. It ended up being one of the best things I've ever done. We ended up purchasing it. We ended up renting out the parking lot as well. We doubled overall rents. And from that one purchase we made, it had to have been back in, I guess, 2010 or 2011. We actually over doubled the value of the property. We bought it cash. We ended up, before I even knew what the BRRRR strategy was, or it was kind of the thing that people spoken about, we actually were able to go back, take more out than what we purchased it for, using that along with the cash flow that we had saved over the last 4 years. And that's what ended up, we ended up using to purchase 28 total units over the next 3 or 4 years. So from that, we've ended up buying a 13 unit, a fourplex, threeplex, four single families, I believe was our total portfolio whenever we were all said and done. But that all came from the original first purchase back in 2010 or 2011.
That's awesome, man. You actually got in there a pretty good time, I guess, 2010.
Yeah.
That's a nice equity gain since then. And then along the way, one of these was this like 13 unit building?
Or? Yeah, we ended up acquiring a 13 unit apartment building. Obviously wasn't large enough to hire an in-house property manager. So we actually managed the self-storage facility and that parking lot. And then we ended up hiring a property manager to help us with the other effectively 28 units. And that 13 unit property was one of those. But anytime you have, and this is again, we found out, anytime you have more human beings living in one location underneath one room, the dynamic between the tenants is even more important. So it became very, very highly high touch management, not just from the management team, but also from myself as well. So the property was in Harrisburg, and that's where the majority of the properties were. I live just outside of Philadelphia, so it was about a two-hour drive out to the property. And I spent about every other weekend out there. So I'd go out on a Saturday or Sunday, spend the day there, get to know the tenants, talk to the tenants, spend a lot of time just, you know, sometimes just dropping off rolls of quarters to let them know who I was and kind of build that goodwill in doing that, doing a lot of we did a quarterly newsletter. I picked that up from somebody. And one of the best reasons why to do that was the bottom of the newsletter was just a reminder of the toilet monster. And people say, what's the toilet monster? Well, if you have somebody that you're on the hook for paying for their water, even if you're not, it doesn't mean that they are going to pay it if that toilet keeps on running. We always wanted to make sure that they knew if something was running, call us. We don't want that to continue. But that constant contact was a big thing for us. That 13 unit ended up being kind of the centerpiece of the overall portfolio because it was the largest thing that we owned. And it was what took up most of our time as we went through as well. Yeah.
Did you notice by sending a quarterly email to the tenants, that's an interesting idea. I don't hear that a lot from owners. But I can imagine that kind of engagement, it probably helped.
Absolutely helped. It absolutely helped. Just in the sense of those tenants that were always, that were there, you know, they were there for the duration of the time we owned the building. Maybe they had been there previously. We formed that relationship. And even if I wasn't there, they knew, okay, here comes TJ again. And so for new tenants coming in, they kind of, you know, well, this is what we do. So there's a little bit more of a pride because they knew who I was. We didn't always present ourselves as the owner of the building. I always say, our thing was my business card, especially for the self-storage, it always said manager. And the reason for that is I've got to report to somebody too. So anytime I had bad news to deliver, it was always, I've got bosses too, and it's usually my wife. So that's the truth of it too. She's my business partner and everything that we do. So any conversation, it was always, I get it. I hear what you're saying, but I've got to report to somebody too. And this is kind of what we're doing as well. So the tenants in the 13 unit, they did know that we owned the building. They also knew who the property manager was, but they knew because I was so in touch as far as communication, they knew if something was wrong that, you know, they could reach out and we were going to handle it pretty quick. So issues were very few and far between. If there was, it was handled pretty quickly. And that did well for retention, which is a big thing as well.
So then, you eventually decide you want to sell the building. I imagine there was some nice appreciation along the way.
Yeah.
And so you reach a deal, you're about to close.
Yeah, so at the time, so we think this is kind of middle of the pandemic, if you will, and prices are skyrocketing everywhere. Kind of crazy time. We were getting offers left and right at the time. And at the time I thought, we're doing well, everything's fine. But we were really thinking of if we were going to sell, we were going to upgrade the portfolio and buy a different class of a lot of the properties. We had learned our lessons. And so we had a realistic, very solid offer. And actually, we had gotten down the road of giving some good information. Done some meetings with the actual potential buyer, and I believe it was like a Tuesday. We had a 4 o'clock meeting to get together and actually in person, believe it or not, during a pandemic, to actually sign the letter of intent. And that morning, I woke up and I was traveling for my day job that day, and got a call from Harrisburg Fire Department in the morning message, and so I missed it, picked it up. And it said, Mr. Williams, we have news, your property on XYZ had a fire last night. Please give us a call. So I immediately, this is 7:45 in the morning, immediately call, nobody answers. So my second call is to the property management company. And so they had no idea that it had occurred either. So at that point, I had a really good relationship with two of my tenants and reached out to them immediately. And they told me, yes, there was a fire and everyone was safe. And that was the most important thing that we wanted to get out of it. But they didn't have any other details other than the fire department was there last night and they went back to bed. So I thought, okay, it couldn't have been too bad and it might be all right. So some background on this. We had done a pretty good job of upgrading a lot of our properties. They had cash flowed well. They had done well. We were what I thought pretty smart with the upgrades we had done to the properties. And about 8 months previous, we had put a new roof on this 13 unit building. So we're $40,000 in the hole on a new roof, mm-hmm. But was a major selling point to the new buyer. It was under a 10-year warranty, and that was transferred. Yeah. And so they were excited about that. And of course, now I find out maybe an hour later that there was now a 200 square foot hole in the middle of that brand new roof. One of the tenants had fallen asleep. We later found out while they had grease on their stove and had fallen asleep and it had caught fire and it was a complete loss. It was our top floor unit, unit number 13, and had gone straight up the wall, completely engulfed part of his apartment building. By the time the fire department got there, the only way they could do it was through the roof, and they cut a 200 square foot hole in the ceiling, pushed water down through, and obviously everything that water damage does as well for the unit. So at this time is probably around 8:30 by the time I have all the information I need to know that, okay, we have a letter of intent signing occurring at 4 o'clock today. And it's not just the 13 unit that we're selling. It is a full 21 unit deal that we have packaged together. So at the fourplex, the threeplex, and there's a couple single family properties in there as well. So at this time, I pick up the phone and I call my insurance agent and I just say, just want to make sure this is where we are. This is what I have. I need to make sure 100% everything I believe to be true is true. He got back to me right away and said, hey, we're in good shape. This is what we can do. Went back to my property manager and I said, this is the status. This is where we are. This is what I'm still looking to do at 4 o'clock today. And what is our likelihood if we were to turn this over? How quickly could we upgrade this apartment? How quickly could we get the interior fixed if I can get the roof fixed first? So we kind of started a game plan in that, called the roofing company. And all this is while I'm still doing my W-2 job during that day and still traveling, of course. And at the time, this is probably around 9:30, I'm speaking to my wife and I said, we'll be fine as we go through this, as long as we keep our heads. The most important thing is no one got hurt. Everything else can be replaced, can be repaired and fixed. We can always find another buyer. We can always manage through this. We've done it before. The most important thing is that tenants are safe. The fact that no one is harmed from any of this, we'll be able to manage through this. In fact, we'll probably be able to make this a good feeling for the tenants, because there'll be something we have to do that they know that, hey, we're here for them. So it'll be a good play on, goodwill in some way, shape or form. We'll be able to. And then with that, to the property manager, do they have everything they need in order to be successful?
Yeah, it's interesting, TJ. I always feel like in life, sometimes some of the best moments actually start out in a negative way. Some of these weird cases. And then it starts to kind of show who the person is. It shows how people react under stress and strain. And oftentimes can, on the flip side, lead to some of the closest engagements. When people see you actually, work through stuff pretty quickly and care about them. And so now, did the tenants have renter's insurance?
So that's a great question. So he actually did. So he did have, yes, he did. He did. Because one of the things we were a big push on was make sure you have renter's insurance.
Cover for you?
His renter's insurance covered his belongings, and there was something else he covered. It was a mix between his and ours. I'd have to go back and go through that again, figure that out.
Because a lot of times, and actually it's a win, because a lot of times your insurance is going to have a deductible or something. And I've seen cases where the renter's insurance will cover basically the deductible, and then your insurance homeowner's insurance will jump in at whatever the max, is $100,000 max. And maybe you had a $200,000 loss here or whatever. But it actually ends up, these situations can end up okay, because you probably were able to fix up the unit then.
So that was the big thing at the very end, kind of the silver lining of the entire story was, we called the roofing company, and we had done a couple of buildings with this roofing company, had formed a pretty good relationship with them and referred them to some other, landlords in the area. So we had a good relationship. So as soon as I called him, he kind of laughed. He's like, "I just saw you, not even 8 months ago for this. I remember it well." And he said, "Let me see if I can get out there." So he actually was able to go out there that day that I called. And he said, "We're going to be able to get this fixed, and we'll probably be able to get it done hopefully in the next 2.5-3 weeks. So there was everything soup to nuts, all new roof, all over again. I give the tenants a lot of credit, because if you've ever put a roof on and everything that goes involved in that, and the noise and all of that, and then to have this occur, and then again to have them come out and do it again, they were just great troopers. So we kind of made it kind of like a community thing of, hey, we're here together, let's do this again. We had a whole thing happen with, there was a mattress that somebody had left in a dumpster, and one of the property management employees flipped over the mattress trying to clean it up while I was there, and there was a skunk underneath it. So he got sprayed, and so I ended up, stopping by and dropping off a case of beer for him in the office. One of those, so it just became this whole ongoing, hey, we're going to make this all right, because it's going to be a great story for us years down the road of all the crazy things that occurred through all of this. But the ending really was, maybe around 11 o'clock or 11:30, I had enough information to know that we were going to be in a good shape and a good position to have a fully renovated unit with a brand new roof, everything cleaned up. And then the additional point to that was, I made a call to one of my tenants who had always wanted to get to the top floor. And she actually, we didn't have any Section 8 in this building, but we did have some non-for-profits who placed tenants in this building for us. So when I called her, I said, I will have this unit cleaned up. We will have it actually really nice. Would you have any interest in moving upstairs? When she said yes, I immediately called the not-for-profit and I said, hey, currently she's at $600 a month on this, but this is going to be $750. So it's going to be a brand new unit. This is what's going to be. And they said, absolutely. She's one of our, you know, long-term, we're okay with that. So we ended up taking her unit from $600 to $675. And then the brand new unit went from $550, which is what the original person who was in that unit, he had been there for 21 years. And they, we just, since he was so there for so long, we just, no one ever increased the rent for him much at all. Right. So whenever we upped his rent, or we upped that unit rent, when that unit went under construction, we had to move him. I was very fortunate. We had one unit in the entire building that was open. It was right across the hallway. So myself and the property management company helped him move what he had into the other unit. And so he was over in the next unit, but we were able to obviously increase rents on two units and actually a third, his unit as well. So the good news was we're able to have the unit completely redone beautifully, brand new roof, still keep the warranty. And the way I positioned it, right around 11:30 or noon, I called the real estate agent. I said, I have good news and bad news. And I said, the bad news is we had a fire at the building and you could hear him just fall off the phone. And I said, and there's a 200 square foot hole in the top. I said, the good news is it's all going to be wrapped up and done by the time that we actually sign the full, sales agreement. And I'm not going to increase the price that we've negotiated already. So you're going to get it for the same thing, but a brand new unit and more overall income. So I think they'll be happy with everything. So that's exactly what ended up occurring. Ended up being a really smooth transaction. The tenant moved upstairs. The other tenant who had the fire moved across the hallway. And they got a beautiful unit 13 and rent was increased. It ended up being exactly that. So definitely one of those, you know, nothing's good, nothing is bad. We just need to be deliberate about how we react from here on and make sure we're handling things properly for everybody.
Yeah. And it's kind of one of those weird things. If all you knew was you're about to sell a large portfolio with some serious money to be made, and you have a fire in the crown jewel of the portfolio, that feels like disaster. It's kind of wild to think that, you know, the combo of insurance and kind of walking everyone through this and moving some people around the building, you can actually net out to a really better place. And then, I mean, the buyer's probably thrilled. They got at the end of the day, they actually got a nicer asset.
It actually even gets better because of it. The property actually appraised higher. And what we ended up doing was we actually took a, it was literally as we were going through financing, I formed a decent relationship with the buyer and they wanted to do a couple other just improvements on another property and maybe even go out and purchase something else. And I said, well, since the value has come back at such, I said, if you're okay with it, we can increase the sale price and just take the equity back out. So they ended up netting out at the closing table another $50,000 on their side, plus a brand new unit, plus higher revenue. So everyone kind of walked away, you know, high-fiving, shaking hands, saying this was a great deal all the way around. And it all started with a 745 message that said, hey, you had a fire at your house. It's been one of those things happen for a reason at the right times whenever they occur. So it was good.
Cool, TJ. Well, hey, man, thanks for giving us the story. It's pretty wild. The timing of it in particular. I mean, anytime you have a fire, it's wild. But the fact that you're about to sell a portfolio and then for everything to kind of end up working out basically exactly how you originally had it planned is pretty nuts. And it's awesome. Well, by the way, I think to kind of go full circle, I'm sure it didn't hurt that you had good relationships with your tenants where you could kind of play a game of Tetris and move people around the property.
That you can't underestimate it's every business we're in is a people business, right? It's a contact sport, right? Everything you do, it doesn't matter what business we're in. The more transactional you are in anything in life, the more you lead yourself to, at the whims of whatever occurred.
Yeah. That's well said. I think that's right. I think it's like, you know, when there's that deep relationship, you always give people the benefit of the doubt. You're always willing to think through other alternatives to help people out. When it is transactional, you know, even if your bank, right? If you actually know the bank person compared to all you're doing is online banking and you have no relationship there, when another opportunity comes, you're going to move banks because there's no, you don't have that same fondness of the people.
You got it. Chad, I appreciate the opportunity to share it. And it's always a pleasure to catch up. It's great.
Yeah, man. Thanks for joining here. Glad we got the tech all figured out. We'll talk soon, bud.
Sounds great. Chad, again, always a pleasure. Take care.
Take care, bud. See ya.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Real Estate Hackers Show. If you've not yet become a member of Real Estate Hackers, you can do that for free at realestatehackers.com. Get access to all of the amazing real estate hacker deals from incredible vendors, a ton of content and materials for you, the investor. You can follow Real Estate Hackers on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. If you can give us a 5-star review for the podcast, I would personally really appreciate it. We read every review, and thank you so much for helping us grow this community for you, the real estate investor.